I'm Brian Ellison, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. From $600 for a coffee maker to $425,000 in legal fees, Clay County residents are saying they aren't happy. More than 9,000 are asking the state auditor to take a hard look at their county government. This week, the county administrator resigned. Today, we find out how things got so bad. Then, why Americans dropped the British U in words like color and humor, and what our two countries' quirky linguistic differences say about the fantastically flexible medium that is English. We'll also get the latest from Branson after yesterday's tragedy at Table Rock Lake. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Government in Clay County, Missouri, has long been something of a full-contact sport. Certain factions and families, strong personalities, long-standing feuds, they all come up again and again over the years. But the conflict that's unfolded over the last 6 months is attracting new levels of attention from the state and from the public. The county, which encompasses the eastern half of Kansas City's Northland, as well as Liberty, Gladstone, North Kansas City, Kearney, it's the fifth largest county in Missouri. Yesterday, the county administrator resigned, that after serious questions have been raised about county spending, and citizens have submitted a petition compelling the state auditor, Nicole Galloway, to come in and investigate county government. So what's going on up there in Clay County? Joining us are Jerry Nolte. He's presiding commissioner of Clay County. He chairs the three-member legislative body in charge there. Commissioner Nolte, welcome.
Thank you very much. And by the way, I just want to say there are a lot of us in Clay County who have connections with Branson, and our hearts go out and our prayers are with the people of Branson, particularly those involved in the tragedy.
I appreciate that very much. We're also joined today by Sherry Duffett. She's one of the leaders of Citizens for a Better Clay County. That's a group that spent much of the last year collecting those more than 9,000 signatures to force an audit. Sherry, welcome to you.
Thank you. And I feel the same as Jerry stated.
And finally, Megan Dillard of Fox 4 News, who has been reporting on this issue for much of the last year. Megan, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me here. Appreciate that.
And I do want to ask Megan to lay out some of this story for us. But first, Commissioner Nolte, the very latest news from yesterday is County Administrator Dean Brookshire. He resigned yesterday. I know the commission accepted that resignation. Was he asked to resign?
Actually, because we're talking about a personnel issue, I'm not at liberty to discuss any details regarding that particular event. So I apologize for that, but that is where I am.
Understand. One of the things that was publicly stated is that he received 15 months of severance pay or plus unused vacation and sick leave. He'll end up getting almost $250,000 paid out from county funds. Is that standard procedure? Is that part of a contract?
Once again, although I realize that is public information, I have to defer that and just allow the statement to stand as it is and not make comment on it.
Sure. I mean, let me ask you this, though. Regardless of why he might have left yesterday, what are the terms of his departure? Prior to that, you had not been hesitant to speak about your evaluation of his performance as county administrator. Were you satisfied with it?
Once again, because of the terms of the contract that that I think you referenced, I am not at liberty to really go into that.
Okay. Let me turn to you, Megan Dillard, and take us back now to when you first began reporting on this. For those who might have missed your reports, back in February, you talked about the amount of money being spent in Clay County on a range of things.
Yes, we did. And in fact, February was the culmination of about a year and a half of research. And concerned citizens had come forward and said, you know, we heard this rumor, we heard that. Is this true? And it took a matter of doing some digging, some requests for information, you know, going through the proper channels, but also people who were just fed up providing us documentation from within the courthouse that raised some pretty serious flags. So that paired with these same citizens who were concerned using their right as citizens, putting together this petition. There's a process that they had to follow in order to get the state auditor involved and taking a look and investigating Clay County. In doing that, they were able to gather the signatures that they need to force an audit by Nicole Galloway. But as far as our reporting goes, it just started. I mean, it was a year and a half of, you know, these are some pretty serious claims. Can we back these up? Are these figures right? And, you know, just making sure we did our due diligence in getting the right information.
And what did you find? What was money being spent on out of county funds?
I think what some have said would be the most egregious thing would be a county this size spending the money that they did on 11 outside law firms. Let me pull up the figure here exactly. But just in comparison, Greene County is the same size as Clay County. They had two outside law firms. So when you look at Clay County spending more than $900,000 on almost a dozen law firms, it just didn't make sense. So that was one of the most egregious things. But then when you dial it down on a level where people can really relate, $600 on a coffee pot is just something that citizens cannot wrap their heads around. When you look at things that have since come, for example, cuts to the sheriff's office, things like that, it doesn't make sense in someone's mind. How can we have this frivolous spending on things like coffee makers?
Sherry Duffett, before Fox News came along, you were already collecting signatures, right?
Yes.
And what drew your attention to these problems that you perceived in the county government?
Well, I retired from Clay County in 2015, and I had worked in three different offices during that time. And I had been involved in the commission meetings and working with budgets and things. And I was getting phone calls from people within the admin building and saying, this isn't right. I was attending the commission meetings. I saw things that didn't seem proper, channels that should be handling the ordinances and resolutions that the county processes and accepts. So I jumped in and decided I would help on that end and help define some of the costs that were going on and explain and a little bit about how the whole process works.
Yeah. Now, you know that obviously politics in the county can sometimes be rough and tumble. I mean, what was different now than in years past?
From my own point of view, it was the attitude of two commissioners, the Eastern Commissioner and the Western Commissioner. They wouldn't listen to when people wanted to come up and make comments at the meetings. They were retaliating against another county elected official that was reporting statutorily. She was required to report things that she suspected, so they retaliated against her. They cut her budget. Now they've taken duties away from her. So that was really what got me in it.
So we should mention that county government in Clay County and in many other counties is by a 3-member county commission. Jerry Nolte, who's with us today, is the presiding commissioner. He's elected countywide. There are two others. Eastern commissioner is Luann Ridgway. The Western commissioner is Gene Owen. We invited Luann Ridgway to appear on our program today. She declined. She said in an email that she assumed our show was set up to portray the state audit as good, so her position of being neutral on that audit would be portrayed as bad. And she said, quote, as to the audit itself, I remain neutral because Clay County already has so many checks and balances that it is virtually impossible to have any significant issues with processes. I want to ask you, Commissioner Nolte, do you share Luann Ridgway's view that the county has sufficient checks and balances?
No, I do not. I believe that we have, in fact, not spent as wisely the people's money as we should have. When I was elected to office a few years back, I started noticing these things, and I have over the years tried to highlight them. The $600 coffee maker was something that I had I'd uncovered when we were signing our expenses. That to me sounded outrageous. The other thing about a coffee maker costing $600 is there's a lot of things that the government spends money on that people just don't, and so they don't have a frame of reference. Everybody has bought a coffee maker, and virtually nobody spends $600 for it.
Let me ask you, Megan Dillard, in your reporting on this story, one of the things that's been going on, there was a criminal investigation of an assistant county administrator over allegations of records tampering that was apparently reported by another elected official, the county clerk. Obviously, there are a lot of issues here.
Very much so, according to the people who believe that. I think one of the biggest concerns that people had is the fact that not only was this county employee still employed by the county after being charged criminally, taxpayer dollars covered her legal fees. that, if you can wrap your head around that, I think that is something that just raised so many flags, and people were just so angry. Here is this woman who is charged with a crime within this county, and your money is going toward paying her legal fees. Not only is that the case, she's still employed with the county, and she still has access to a $50,000 credit card. These are the claims that have people so upset within Clay County.
Megan, are you concerned at all in your reporting on this that with the longstanding conflicts, the kind of the feuds that have been going on for a while with between some of the people, these players in this story, are you concerned that any of your sources are settling scores or going after opponents or rivals with these suggestions of misconduct?
There could be some of that, but I think as journalists, we both know that's very much a part of how we have to weed out what is and isn't good information. And I think when so much of it is backed up with documented, you know, factual invoices and email records and just different things that we've had access, we wouldn't report it if it hadn't been vetted. And so whereas there may be some of that, if that is the case, it's something we steer clear of and we stick to the facts.
I want to invite our listeners, if you have questions or opinions about what's happening in Clay County, and we suspect you do, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. We'll try to get to some of your questions and comments if we can. You know, you collected, Sherry Duffett, all of these signatures. You're now waiting for the signatures to be validated and the auditor to begin her official investigation. What do you think is going on? I mean, what do you suspect this audit is going to find? Is it malice or is it incompetence? Is it a deliberate effort to be fraudulent, or is it just carelessness on the part of administrators?
Well, I think it's a combination of all. I think that they feel like they have the taxpayer money to do with what they want. And just the fact that they've spent over $900,000 on outside attorneys is abominable. It's not their money. It's our money. They don't need to be using it for their own personal gain. And in a way, I think they are kind of doing that.
Apart from a $600 coffee maker, though, what are they personally gaining from the way the money's being spent?
Very good question. I got to see some of the purchasing card, which is the county credit cards that they use. And there are charges on there for PayPal, $6,000 to PayPal, $4,000 to Amazon. I don't know what they're ordering. I don't know if they're ordering things for their home or for their office or for whatever they're going to use it for. Recently, they purchased an $85,000 boat for the Smithville Lake, where the Corps of Engineers actually has jurisdiction over Smithville Lake. Mm. The Clay County does not. So I don't know, why are we buying an $85,000 boat?
And Commissioner Jerry Nolte, I mean, you've been in office for all these years. Why have you not been able to stop this spending that citizens are raising questions about?
Actually, I have been making as much effort as possible to do that. In fact, we were just talking about the audit, and I have, in fact, not only signed the audit petition, but I've also been involved in gathering signatures. That is not when I say that, one of the things I want to make clear is this is a citizen-driven effort. This is not a Jerry Nolte effort or any other elected official. In fact, some 70-plus elected, former elected, and candidates have signed on to this petition. And a lot of the questions you're asking, we can speculate about, but the only true way we can get an absolute answer is through a complete and very exhaustive audit.
But I guess, I mean, as presiding commissioner, I mean, you are the top elected office holder in the county. Why are you not in a position to have made some changes here?
Because even if I am the presiding commissioner, even though I am the presiding commissioner, a 2-to-1 vote is a 2-to-1 vote. I have one vote, which is equal to each of my associate commissioners. And so that is kind of the bottleneck right there. For instance, we were talking about the legal costs for one of our employees. I, in fact, proposed that we not do that. That did not prevail. It was also my preference that a person accused of a crime against the county who was an employee be put on administrative leave. That, unfortunately, did not go forward through a 2-to-1 vote. So a lot of the things that I've tried to do to remedy this have, in fact, resulted in a 2-1 vote, which defeated that initiative.
Megan Dillard, it sounds like Commissioner Nolte, along with a lot of these citizens, are on the same page. As he mentioned, there's often been a 2-1 vote where he's been the one. You've spoken with the others in county government, some of the other commissioners. What have they said to you?
To sum it up, simply nothing. We've put in all of the same requests that we would in trying to reach out to the presiding commissioner. The answer we get most often is no comment. The statement you read from Commissioner Ridgway is very similar to something I would have received when you put a request in for this show. To the point where we have gone to the courthouse, stood at the reception desk, waited, knocked on doors. It's not a very open dialogue between both parties, myself and the other commissioners.
This audit that has been requested, or actually is compelled by the petition from the citizens, Sherry, do you know how much that will cost the state?
It won't cost the state anything. The county is responsible for paying for that. But Nicole Galloway, this current state auditor, has assured us that it will be between $100,000 and $150,000. It should not go anywhere above that. I know there's been some speculation from inside the courthouse that it's going to be more than that. It's not.
Right. One of the points that Luann Ridgway did make in her written comments to us is, first of all, that she doesn't see how the estimate of $100,000 to $150,000 could be reasonable. She cites another audit of the city of Columbia that was $750,000. But she also says there's the cost to the county in addition to the costs incurred by the state auditor, the cost of the county to be responsive to the auditor's requests. Is that something you're concerned about, Jerry Nolte?
I am concerned about that. Clearly, we're talking about taxpayer money, and the more frugal we can be with it, the better. I think the way for the county to keep its expenses to the minimum required would be to, and what I am advocating for as well, is that we fully comply and cooperate with the legal authorities in this audit mandated by the action of the people.
Well, when we come back, we'll see how this latest series of unfortunate events in Clay County fits into its broader history. It's not the first time there's been serious disagreement about matters of county governance. We also still want to hear from you. What have you seen or heard or wondered about in Clay County government? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. Stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Steve Kraske. Tuesday on the program, we talked with Kansas City, Kansas Mayor David Alvey about the upcoming vote to renew the public safety tax. You can hear that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. Next week, we'll meet the new superintendent for the Shawnee Mission School District. We'll look at growing hemp in Kansas, and we'll examine the life and death of Ryan Stokes, who was killed by Kansas City police 5 years ago. Be sure to be with us for those conversations next week on Up to Date. In just a few minutes, we'll have a good chinwag about the shared history and rivalry between the British and American ways of speaking the English language. But first, we're continuing our conversation about Clay County, Missouri government. The state auditor will soon take a hard look at spending and governance practices there after a citizen petition with some 9,000 signatures was submitted. We're talking about that today and about the history of conflict there north of the river. Jerry Nolte, the presiding commissioner of Clay County, is with us. So is Sherry Duffett, one of the citizens leading this call for a state audit, and Megan Dillard of Fox 4 News, who spent more than a year covering this story. Megan, have you? I know you've been working on this story for a couple of years. How does this fit into kind of the history of conflict and some would say chaos in county government in Clay?
I know that there has been some history of this. Clay County has been audited before, but what I can tell you and what I've uncovered, this is certainly unprecedented, both within my career and with anything I've seen in local government. Same reaction I get when we bring it up the ladder to, the state auditor and different people. It's unlike anything anyone has ever really seen or covered.
We have a call from Jerry, who actually lives in Clinton County. He called us at 816-235-2888. Jerry, thanks for calling Up to Date, Jerry.
Oh, hi. I would just like to have a little clarification, if I could, please. My understanding is that in Missouri counties, where they have three commissioners, one head commissioner and two other commissioners, that it takes a quorum to pass anything or to do anything. And as Mr. Nolte was saying there, if he's outvoted 2-1 by the other commissioners, and he only has one vote just like they do. But if either one of those other commissioners fail to attend to cast a vote, and there's only two people there, that, and if it comes to a one-to-one vote, then the head commissioner's vote carries as if it was a full forum, a quorum, I'm sorry.
All right. That's a good question. Let's see. Is that true, Jerry Nolte?
It is. When you have a three-person panel, a quorum is, in fact, two persons. If one of the associate commissioners is not available and is not present, then the presiding commissioner may cast that vote. If the presiding commissioner is not there, then the county clerk names one of the two associates as presiding, and I assume that that also works that way.
It seems like this three-person commission system, which is not unique, of course, to Clay, it's very common in Missouri, has some problems built into it that you've just outlined. And unfortunately, Clay County seems to be demonstrating those problems with the conflict that has existed between yourself and between Luann Ridgway and Gene Owen. In fact, last year, Gene Owen had criticized your leadership style in a couple of different ways. At one point, he threatened to punch you just after a meeting, and that was caught on the recording of the meeting. Here's what that sounded like.
Next time you call me a parrot, I'm going to knock you on your ass.
Well, I guess it could have been punching or some other form of striking. That audio was from KSHB, by the way. He also told the Star that he thinks that you think you're a king. And at one point in July of last year, the county administrator, who's now resigned, deactivated your building access and said he was investigating you. Commissioner Nolte, what the heck is going on?
Obviously, when we have disagreements as fundamental as we do have, tempers are going to flare. One of the main points of contention, which came up once again in our December budget meetings, was the funding levels for our county sheriff. The sheriff has been cut something on the order of $900,000 to $1 million. Public safety and the safety of our citizens is one of our primary goals, and those cuts I thought were unconscionable.
You're suggesting that there is a substantive difference as well as a personality difference.
Actually, I would say it's more substantive than it is personality. I think that as persons we can get along just fine on many levels, but when it comes to policy and the implementation of those policies, that we do have problems. By the way, one of the things you'd mentioned about the three-member panel, we have limitations by the Sunshine laws that are in place in Missouri. In a setting, for instance, I was in the legislature, if I was at odds with a fellow legislator, we could sit down and we could talk about it very freely in private and work out our differences. That opportunity does not present itself in a three-person panel.
Because if you were to meet privately, you would essentially be violating the state's open meeting laws.
Exactly so. Well, if we are discussing items that that are or could conceivably come before the commission, then yes, we would be in danger of possibly violating that.
Because you would be a quorum of the commission.
Because that would establish a quorum, a larger body. Would certainly relieve that particular concern.
That is another problem of the three-member commission. Sherry, you're here representing citizens of Clay County. What's your take on what's happening there at the county courthouse these days?
I just think that there's a lot of behind-the-scenes activities that people aren't aware of, and that hopefully that this is what the audit is going to reveal, and it will be an in-depth audit of the scope of procedures and policies, and not just how the money's being spent. There's going to be a lot of things that's where they do have a financial audit every year, but it's only finances. So this is what we are hoping with the audit. So I can't really say what's going on up there, but I did see during the commission meetings that it was a consistent effort to block Jerry Nolte from anything that he would propose on the agenda. They would take it off. They would block his comments. Then they took public comments off the agenda, and that really bothers me. Mm-hmm. that's going on.
Megan Dillard, to what extent do you feel like the dysfunction that a lot of people observe in the way the county commission is operating is affecting the way other office holders and other staff are conducting themselves in the county?
I think it affects morale at the courthouse. It's almost just people feel deflated. I was speaking with the county clerk there in Clay County. Law states that anything that's discussed in executive session must be posted 72 hours afterwards, minutes, what was discussed in the meeting. The county clerk has not received minutes since December. Whether or not that's tied to the same time that her budget was slashed, who knows? But it's these little examples of things that seem to overlap and intertwine. And it really, to speak to people's morale, it's just defeating.
And she, in theory, is the clerk of the commission.
Yes.
It's her job to get those minutes.
100%.
I guess the last question then is, what's next here? Where does this go from here? Any idea, Megan, a timeline on the state auditor's work on this?
I don't know. I know that at the end of June 29th, the Citizens for Clay County presented almost double the signatures that they needed. If anything, speaks to how serious they are about provoking change within their county. But as far as the timeline, I know Nicole Galloway has been very open from the start about being willing and available to do what needs to be done in Clay County. Maybe Jerry or Sherry can weigh in on an exact timeline.
Sherry, are you familiar with how that works?
A little bit. First, we have to have all the signatures verified by the Board of Elections.
Right, so she can't even start the audit.
Right. But she's already, I think, got a team going in place. I think she knew this was going to happen. But then once the signatures are verified, then they'll get into the in-depth audit. And it could take up to a year. It could take up to 2 years. She said it just depends on how deep things start to go.
And Jerry Nolte, even if the state auditor completes this audit, even if she finds certain poor practices or things that should be done differently in the government, does that guarantee that anything will be different? Does she have enforcement power? What will you as a county commission do with that?
Obviously, the report will be forwarded to us once she has completed it. As far as I know, we are not under obligations to adopt any of those specifically, but I think we should have certainly a good series of meetings based on those, and I think we should be looking seriously at a citizens panel that will help those recommendations be forwarded to us and get the opinion of the people of Clay County.
Let's take one more call from Jose, who joins us. Jose, welcome to Up to Date.
Hey, good morning, Brian. My quick question is, how often do the commissioners come up for a re-election?
Good question. And Commissioner Nolte, that's a question that is very near and dear to you right at this moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is something certainly that is on my plate. Each commissioner has a four-year term. The presiding commissioner is up this year. Mm-hmm. The associate commissioners are up during the presidential election years. So we are offset. So we are a continuously serving body. We do not turn over all at once the way, the Congress does.
So perhaps that's the ultimate answer to the question of how any concerns raised by the auditor gets addressed. Ultimately, it's all in the hands of the voters of Clay County.
That's exactly why I would like to involve them a lot more. We just alluded to the idea that the citizen comments have been eliminated from the agenda over my objection. I think we need to allow the largest latitude possible for citizens to redress their government with grievances. It is obviously a cornerstone of our democratic republic.
Well, we'll be following this story as it continues to unfold in Clay County. That's Jerry Nolte. He's presiding commissioner. Sherry Duffett is one of the leaders of Citizens for a Better Clay County, which gathered the signatures that have compelled a state audit. And a lot of this has been brought to Kansas City's attention through the great reporting of Megan Dillard at Fox 4 News. Thanks to all of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Much in the news in recent weeks has been the deterioration of the relationship between two longtime allies, the United Kingdom and the United States. Prime Minister Theresa May and President Donald Trump have sparred at times amid a changing world. If only we spoke the same language. Lynn Murphy is the keeper of the blog Separated by a Common Language, and her new book is The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Lynn Murphy, welcome to Up to Date.
Hello, thank you for having me.
She joins us by Skype this morning. So, Lynn, you call it a love-hate relationship. What do you mean?
Well, you often hear Americans say things like, I love a British accent, or a British accent sounds so sexy, or things like that. You don't tend to hear the same thing in the other direction.
Yes, I love an American accent. Yes.
Yeah. You tend to hear in Britain, you know, oh, those Americanisms are coming over. We have to protect ourselves against Americanisms, against American spellings, against American pronunciations. And so, yeah, there's a complicated relationship between the two. that has a long history and I find very interesting to think about.
Yeah, your first chapter is in fact called The Queen's English Corrupted, that implying that that Brits run around speaking the language correctly while Americans run around trying to destroy it. How fair is that assessment in your view?
Well, that's a very unfair assessment because, you know, English is all sorts of things. American has a standard English. Britain has a standard English, you know, the type of English that you'd write in a newspaper, that you'd use on the radio. And they're just different Englishes. One of them isn't better than the other. One of them isn't worse. And, you know, there are some tendencies in Britain to see a mistake in writing, for instance, and say, oh, look, that American influence. And it might be something no American's ever done, but there's this assumption that if it's wrong, maybe it's come over from America.
Your book is a lot of fun, if nothing else, for all the quotations about the difference between American and British ways of speaking the language. You have the quote from Oscar Wilde, we really have everything in common with America nowadays, except, of course, language. And then Baron Summers in the House of Lords, this is just back in 1979, if there is a more hideous language on the face of the earth than the American form of English, I should like to know what it is. a lot of language has been expended on discussing the language differences.
Absolutely. And I was just in a bookshop here yesterday reading the title of a new book called If Only They Didn't Speak English. And it's a BBC correspondence book about Trump's America. I mean, that's what the subtitle is. And, you know, that's the thing, because we're linked by this language, sometimes, even though we understand each other completely well, sometimes we want to put each other at arm's length.
Yeah. I mean, is that assumption that British assumption that they're speaking it properly and Americans aren't, is that simply because it's older, because America brought English from Britain, or is there something else going on there? Is there something about the way they speak it that causes them to think it's proper?
I don't think there's anything to do with the way they speak it. It's just that people are used to the English that they used to, you know, so you tend to think when you hear someone saying something that you don't say, you'll often think they made a mistake. So if you're British and you've been hearing Americans speak English and they say different things, you think, oh, that's off. That's not what I would say. But at the same time, it's nothing about the language itself. It's just these stereotypes. And if you grew up speaking English and being English, you would tend to assume that, you know, being English means that you get to say what English is, what the language is. But, you know, things don't work that way.
Okay, so there's hundreds of examples probably, but what is one that's been top of mind for you lately of a way that British people see something that Americans do in speaking English that is ruining the language?
Well, to give one example that, and the first to come to mind, is I've seen people say, well, people these days, young people these days spell would of with an O-F, would of. Mm. And that must be the Americans. But actually, when you look at the data, when you look at how many times it's written in American websites versus British websites, no, Americans do it, but it didn't come from America. You know, it's the type of mistake anybody could make. But other things are things like we say math. Americans say math, and British people say maths with an S on the end. And math drives British people crazy.
You know, one of the things that it occurs to me I often think is ruining the language is text messaging and the shorthand of the way people communicate through the internet. I assume that's just as true in Britain as it is in America.
It absolutely is, but it's also changed a lot since we first got text messaging. So when we first had to, you know, hit the key four times to get an R or something like that, we wrote things very, very briefly. And nowadays, the message is finished for you by your phone. You know, it predicts what you're going to say. And so
right.
We write much more complete and grammatical messages than we did originally. And so the technology has caught up with the language. And I think we can see that continuing to happen, that the technology, yeah, it'll bring in some new words. It might bring in some new abbreviations, but how we speak is going to be what runs how we speak in future rather than the technology itself.
You make the case in this book, not only that America has not ruined the language, but that you could make a case that America's use of English has in some ways saved the language, your chapter title, yeah. Saving the English Language Since 1607, America. What do you mean?
Well, a lot of things that are American versus British are the older form is in America, or America preserves a form that existed in Britain earlier, but has been forgotten in Britain. So, you know, things like British people don't say sidewalk, they call it the pavement. But sidewalk came over to America, you know, with immigrants in the 18th century. Or, you know, all sorts of weird little grammatical things. Like we say gotten, I've gotten used to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas in British, you'd have to say got. They've lost the 10. And, you know, that's we say it because that's how it used to be said. But that got dropped off in British English.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's overly romantic to think American English is the older English. They've both changed, just in different places.
I have to say, I'm listening to your accent and trying to place it. Where are you from?
Well, I'm from near Rochester, New York, but my accent is very, very adjusted. I've lived outside the United States for 23 years now. And so, yes, I've got what my daughter calls my radio voice, and I'm putting that on now.
Well, that's funny. That's what I'm using as well. We've got a call, and which is remarkable since we haven't given the phone number, but we have a call from Joe in Lenexa. Joe, welcome to Up to Date.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My company has an office in the Birmingham area of the UK, and I got a colleague over there that I talk to a couple hours every week, and I will say I find his English more colorful or charismatic. I just really enjoy the way he expresses things. We do have some disagreements about certain words. I pronounce aluminum aluminum. He pronounces it aluminium, which sounds completely wrong to me. But then there's also examples of where they use a different word to describe the same thing. We say elevator, he says lifts. We say this and that, he says bits and bots, you know. So, but I really enjoy listening to him talk. That's all I got.
Thank you, Joe. I suspect he probably pronounces Birmingham differently than you pronounce Birmingham as well. Thanks for the call, Joe. That's probably a pretty common reaction, Lynn. He finds it sort of charming that his British colleague pronounces things differently.
And it's interesting how he finds it more, you know, creative and charismatic, because that's something that you do hear British people who don't mind Americanisms as much. They'll often say, oh, American English is so creative and British English is so stodgy. But that's the thing. You notice the things in other people's speech, in the speech of the people with different accents to yours. And you don't think, oh, actually, in American English, we're really creative. We've got words like discombobulate, you know?
that's not a British word?
No.
No. I think this must be true. I am a fan of the Great British Baking Show, and I have not baked anything in my entire life. But for some reason, I love it when Mary Berry says that the latticework on top of a pie is all higgledy-piggledy, like I heard last night. Are there American television shows that people watch in Britain and appreciate the language in, or are there other reasons that they watch American television shows?
I think there's mostly other reasons they watch it. People here are very fond of Frasier, and I don't know how much that might have been about the particular language of Frasier and the give and take between the American characters and the British character. But yeah, for the most part, I think people watch American television for the stories.
Yeah, I have to ask, I saw on your blog yesterday, you have a blog. Remind us the name of your blog that people could follow.
It's Separated by a Common Language.
Yes.
And I also, I'm on Twitter as Linguist, L-Y-N-N-E-G-U-I-S-T, where I tweet a difference of the day every weekday.
You'll now pick up some followers from the Kansas City area. I have to ask, I saw on your blog yesterday that you're currently attending the 5th conference of the International Society for the Linguistics of English, and then you said, or hashtag IL5, as all the cool kids are tweeting it. What in the world is discussed at a conference of the International Society for the Linguistics of English?
Oh, everything about English. I mean, my paper there was about how Americans write lists of British words they want to learn and what the qualities of those words are. So I found that very amusing. But, you know, there was everything from which adjectives can you put ness on the end of to make a noun to, you know, what the origins of the English language are to, you know, all sorts of things, what kind of language people writing blogs use versus the kind of language that people writing newspapers use, you know, all sorts of things that you can study about the English language or any language.
We also, of course, talked about spelling, humor, H-U-M-O-R or O-U-R. Where do you come out? What should be the right way to spell things, the British way or the American way?
The way for the place that you are is what I would say. So, you know, when I correct my students' essays, I make them put the U in because they're writing essays for an English university and they need to use the standard English here. And I would hope that my colleagues in America are doing the same for British students, saying, okay, let's become a little bilingual and use the right code for the place where we are.
Well, it's a very fun book, but also a very serious, academically well-produced book by Lynn Murphy, The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. She's also professor of linguistics at the University of Sussex. Lynn Murphy, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And she joined us by Skype. This week on the program, we learned about the young black women and girls who fought for desegregated education years before Brown versus Board of Education. To hear their stories, head to kcur.org/up-to-date. Find us on Twitter. We're at @KCURUpToDate, and I'm at @PTSBrian. You can also follow KCUR on Facebook. Next week, we'll have the story of Ryan Stokes, the 24-year-old black man killed by Kansas City police in 2013. His family says they're still waiting for an accurate account of what happened. Our theme music is composed by the great Bobby Watson. We had help this week from Linda Scher, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, Dallas Johnson, and Emily Park. It's been a pleasure to be with you this week. I'm Brian Ellison, and you are up to date.